Bhagavatam. I'm the glories of Maharaj Ambarish. And for the benefit of those of you that haven't been attending, I'd like to describe a little bit, and for those of you that did attend, I'd like to show how this story of Maharaj Ambarish connects with another very, very nice and wonderful presentation in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the two-part harmony, where Mother Devahuti is inquiring from her son and incarnation of the Supreme Lord, Lord Kapila Dev. The particular part of the story of Maharaj Ambarish, or maybe is that our devotee children? Screaming from the closing. For those of you that are not familiar with who is Maharaj Ambarish, he existed as king very early in this present Vaibhaswata Manu's reign in Satya Yuga, 27 Yuga cycles previous, so quite some time ago. But the activities that Maharaj Ambarish performed were very much like the activities that we perform in our ISKCON society today, with I think the special addition that we have of wonderful kirtan every Sunday evening before the deities. But Maharaj Ambarish is glorified for his becoming a perfect devotee, Shuddha Bhakta, by these very same processes that we're applying ourselves to. And because of his, at the same time he was a pure devotee, yeah, I guess so. So in addition to his devotional practices by which he perfected his life, Maharaj Ambarish oversaw a very big kingdom. The size of his kingdom was the size of this planet. Big place. We have maybe our household to look after, some children and some place of work. And that keeps us really busy. He was the king of the world. But he was very, very fixed in his devotional practice. And on the strength of the purity of his devotional practice and his observance of religious principles, specifically it's described his observance of the Brahminical culture, it was very easy for him to perform his ruling activities on spiritual strength. And in the course of time, so just for the particular story part, as time passed, he was observing a particular vrata for Ekadasi, and for one whole year he was very strictly observing fasting for Ekadasi, and after one full year was over during the Kartik month, he went to Vrindavan. Hare Krishna. He went to Vrindavan and he was observing a final full day, three full day fast on that final Kartik Ekadasi. And at the end of the third day, it was the Dvadasi, and it was time to break the fast. And Durvasa Muni came. And to honor Durvasa Muni, he wanted, Ambarish Maharaj wanted him, Durvasa, to break the fast first, because he was a Brahmana, not just a Brahmana, but very, very, very exalted, powerful yogi. And so Durvasa Muni accepted the invitation, but indicated that he first had to take his bath because he had been traveling, and he went to the Jamuna to take bath and was engaged in meditation on the impersonal Brahman for some time. In fact, it can take a very long time. And time was expiring for breaking the fast, so it was a problem for Maharaj Ambarish, because the effect of the vrata would not be achieved if he didn't break the fast. So he had to break the fast, but then he couldn't break the fast without first having Durvasa Muni break the fast, who wasn't there. So it was a dilemma. And we sometimes find ourselves in dilemmas in life, where we have two things that we have to do, or what, anyway, very difficult decision to make, where somebody might be offended if we do this, but if we don't do this, then it's a problem. And I find those things in life. I'm sure we all find those things in life. So he did the right thing. He turned to the Brahmanas. What should I do? And the Brahmanas gave him the advice. Here's a loophole. According to the scripture, you can break the fast and not break the fast at the same time by sipping the Charanamrita water that bathed the deity, the Abhishek that you performed that morning. Actually, one time I was explaining this, just like right over here, we have our Charanamrita bowl. And everybody knows, once a year on Nirjal Ekadasi, we can get the benefit of observing all Ekadasis if we don't let water pass our lips, Nirjal Ekadasi. So we come before the deity and greet the deity every morning at 7 a.m. And just after greeting the deity, we come over here to take Charanamrita. So if we avoid taking Charanamrita, it's not respecting the deity. But if we take Charanamrita, then we're not achieving the effect of Nirjal Ekadasi. What to do? Should we take the Charanamrita of the deity or and respect or not? And so the Brahmanas gave him the advice, go ahead, little sip of Charanamrita, and you're breaking the Ekadasi fast on Dvadasi day, but you're not breaking the fast and not offending Durvasa Muni. But Durvasa Muni got offended anyways. He felt offended. He overreacted, as they say. He was attached and he overreacted. He was proud. Actually, he was envious of Maharaj Ambarish's more exalted position. He knew that he was more exalted, and therefore he was engaged in kutinati, in this business of fault finding. And so he really overreacted. He decided he wanted to kill Maharaj Ambarish. So he created one demon by grabbing some bunch of hair from his head and dashing it to the ground, and somehow with mantras this demon appeared. A fiery demon carrying a trident, just waiting for instructions from Durvasa Muni what to do, and Durvasa Muni pointed to Maharaj Ambarish and said, kill him. And so the demon went for Maharaj Ambarish. But Maharaj Ambarish was protected by the Sudarshan Chakra of Lord Vishnu, and Sudarshan Chakra took care of the demon, cut him into little pieces, And then Sudarshan Chakra turned upon the demon, turned upon Durvas Muni. So Durvas Muni had to head for the hills as fast as he could, his yogic powers could carry him. But Sudarshan Chakra was hot on his trail, and nowhere could he go to get free from the chase of Sudarshan Chakra. He went to Brahma, who said, "I'm sorry. I'm the servant of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and any powers that I have are not capable of counteracting the power of Lord Vishnu. And even if I did have such powers, I wouldn't, because I will not act against the will of the Supreme Lord. Sorry, I can't help you." So off Durvas Muni went to Lord Shiva's abode in Kailash. And he got a very similar answer with more expanded explanation, but the same answer. "Can't help you. This is the chakra of Lord Vishnu. And although we engage in so many activities, Lord Brahma and I, and we still can't counteract his own potencies. What to speak of his own potencies, we," he listed a whole number of persons who have the capacity to understand all things past, present, and future. "We can understand those things. We can see beyond time, beyond present time. But we can't understand how his energies are working. And we certainly aren't in a position to counteract his potencies. So my recommendation, go to Lord Vishnu. You have my personal invitation. Go to Lord Vishnu quickly. And it's his chakra. If anybody can do anything, he can help you." So off he went to Lord Vishnu's abode and threw himself at his feet, offered similar prayers, confessing his mistake. He was deeply repentant. He realized that he had blundered very badly due to his pride. Like we might sometimes realize when we're in a difficult situation. Often when people are in a difficult situation, they blame somebody else. But in this case, Durvas couldn't blame anybody else. It was his own mistake. But he needed relief from the burning chakra that was blazing right behind him. And so when he came before Lord Vishnu, the part that I want to focus on in this narration is what Lord Vishnu said to Durvas Muni. Right away, the first thing that Lord Vishnu said is, "I'm not independent." Now, we always glorify the Supreme Lord as independent. One of his opulences is, although he has all strength, all beauty, all wealth, all knowledge, all strength, he's also completely detached. He's the independent Lord whose will determines everything. So he explained himself. He is the supreme independent Lord. And based on his supreme independence, he becomes very, very attracted by and captivated by, and he places himself in a position submissive to the desires of those who surrender unto him, his pure devotees, like Maharaj Ambarish, Shuddha Bhakta Maharaj Ambarish. He said, in fact, this abode of Vaikuntha of mine, I don't even want to be here. If there's no opportunity to associate with my devotees, there's no happiness for me here, and so there's no need for me to be here without the association of my devotees. In fact, because they've surrendered everything for me. Surrendered means, he says, whatever persons normally consider to be the sources of their happiness, their wealth, their family, their paraphernalia, their relationships, their whatever they have. They do not place themselves in the position to be the enjoyers of those things. Rather, for my unalloyed devotees, I am everything to them. So how can I possibly abandon them for even a moment? He's really in a mood of... Durvas Muni didn't ask him to abandon his devotees. He just said, get, you know, this thing off my back. I've got a problem. Please relieve my problem. So Prabhupada explains that the problem, the Sudarshan Chakra problem, was the Lord's protection of his devotee. But it was more than just protecting his devotee. At this point, Sudarshan Chakra and this whole exhibition of the Lord's potencies was to teach Durvasa Muni a lesson. Because Durvasa Muni, when he created this demon, he said to Maharaj Ambarish, I'm going to show you something that you will never forget. So the Lord was actually, he was speaking the Lord's words. He was taking him through a lesson that he would never forget. That being envious of and proud of his own position would and as a result of that enviousness offending in a very serious way, offending a very exalted devotee. This is what Lord Vishnu said later on in his discussion, is this is actually self-envy. It appears to be envy of Maharaj Ambarish. But extend that further, and it's the devotee of the Lord. Prabhupada explains this very nicely. A devotee of the Lord is the representative of the Lord. And everyone in this material world comes to this material world because of dvesha, or an attitude of repulsion towards the Supreme Lord. Every one of us that has one of these material bodies, raga devesha samutena dvandva mohina bharata, we receive a material body because of raga and dvesha. We want to be in the position of the supreme enjoyer. Why should God be the supreme enjoyer? He's the center all the time. Why not me? I want to be in the center. But there's a problem. He's in the center. So raga is also followed by this dvesha. Somebody's sitting in a seat. So I want to sit in the seat. I want to sit on the throne. But there's a problem. Someone's sitting on the throne, so I have to pull the person off the throne so I can sit on the throne. So it's the combination of very strong attraction for worldly enjoyment and some disregard or ill regard for the one who is actually rightfully the enjoyer of that situation. There's one Supreme Lord, and the devotees of the Lord represent that one Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada explains, naturally devotees are the object of envy of others, just because they're devotees of the Lord, and persons in this world are envious of the Supreme Lord. That's why we're here. Or at least why we come here and then try to overcome that problem. So he speaks one verse. Actually, there's two that I wanted to highlight and then parallel those with Lord Kapila's teaching. He says, Mayi nirbhadha hridaya sadavak samadarshanaha vashe kurvanti mam bhaktya sat striya satpatim yatha. He's describing the quality of a pure devotee. Mayi nirbhadha hridaya. The pure devotee is completely attached to me. And all others he sees in relation to me, or he sees with equal vision, samadarshana. So because of these two qualifications, the devotee's mind is completely attached to me, and they treat others with equanimity and kindness as they would treat me. Because of that, I'm so pleased with them. I give myself to them. He makes the comparison, just as a gentle husband. Now sometimes husbands aren't always gentle, right, ladies? But a gentle husband is controlled by a chaste wife, by the service of the chaste wife. Not that the chaste wife is sitting calculating, I'd like to control my husband. What's a good way to do that? But rather, because of affection for the husband and acting in a proper position, very, very faithfully serving the husband and happily and devotedly serving the husband. That consistent mood of the wife naturally wins the heart of the husband, so that the husband will naturally want to see to all the needs and care, and just a natural reciprocation. Prabhupada glorifies that this is the strength, the greatest strength of a woman, is her chastity. I heard Prabhupada tell the story once, when he was a businessman, as a householder, he was engaged in business. And there was some situation where they were meeting with a group of high-level businessmen in some office situation, and it was daily schedule for the cleaning lady to clean in that space, but she couldn't go into the space because the men were there having a meeting. So she had her bucket and her little broom and sat outside the door and just waited. And so their meeting was over, and they were standing in the room, and she was very quietly standing by the door and just being very unobtrusive and quiet. And Prabhupada said, as soon as the men saw the cleaning lady standing there, they immediately all stepped aside, made way like she's the king coming in to do her business. And Prabhupada said, from that experience, I could understand the power of chastity in a woman. It can move big, big, powerful men. Get out of the way, here I come. But not by demanding, get out of the way, here I come, but by a very chaste and proper mood. It's a strength. Anyway, Prabhupada, this is one of Prabhupada's explanations. So the Supreme Lord Vishnu is saying, like that, I'm controlled by my devotee. So if someone wants to conquer God, there's the formula. Not by your own mightiness and strength and power, but by the power of love, the power of loving service. So he's still in the supreme, independent, and all-powerful position, and we're still in the tiny, dependent and subordinate position. But by his own omnipotence, he places the devotee in the superior position. He subordinates himself to the desire of his devotee. And it's for that reason that Lord Vishnu said to Durvas Muni, I can't help you either. It's only if my devotee says okay, then it's okay. Because whatever he says is okay. That's what I want. Then he spoke another very wonderful verse. Sadavo hridayam mayam sadhunam hridayam tvaham mad anyat te najananti naham tebyo managavi. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. This is the relationship of loving exchange that exists between the Lord and his devotee. As Yayatam Mam Prapadyante Tangs Tadaiva Pajamyaham, Krishna says, as living entities surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. And if one places oneself in a position of exclusive love and devotion to the Supreme, then the Supreme reciprocates exactly as one approaches him. In one lecture, Srila Prabhupada explained this point in this particular way. He said that love is exclusive, but the beauty of loving Krishna is if we simply love Krishna automatically, because all living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna, that love is extended to all living entities. And try it the other way around. Try to love all living entities and somehow leave out the position of love of God. It's totally exhausting and impossible. It certainly doesn't have the same power of upliftment for the living entity. It's just not an attainable goal. So the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam, this lesson, one of the lessons in the story of Maharaj Ambarish, is because Maharaj Ambarish had that quality of attachment to the Supreme Lord, he had no other desire. And because he had no other desire, he wasn't at all intimidated by or threatened by that horrible demon that was sent by Durvasa Muni. He didn't even try to protect himself when that demon came his way. He didn't, even his mind did not change when the demon came charging towards him in a death-threatening way. He remained completely neutral. Narayana paraksarge na kutaschana bibhuti svarga apavarga narateshu apitu yarta darshanam. It's a position that can't be imitated, or you can't put it on and play act being a pure devotee. It's the position where any situation at all of this world is something that neither attracts nor repels. And that's because Narayana Parayana, because of the situation of consciousness being fixed upon the Supreme in devotion. So, the parallel story, and I'll try to be brief about this one, not story, but a description, is a situation where Lord Kapiladev, it's also in Satya Yuga, Lord Kapiladev is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and he's appeared as the son of Kardama Muni and Devahuti. And after some time, Kardama Muni leaves, leaving just Devahuti, the mother, and Lord Kapiladev. So Devahuti recognizes, although her son, she recognizes, she's very clear about the fact that her son is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. But she knows that her situation of life is temporary, it's not going to endure, and she has not achieved spiritual perfection. She recognizes all those things. And so she says to her son, very soon, just as my husband, because there was an arrangement made when her husband, Kardama Muni, agreed to accept Devahuti as his wife, the agreement was made with her father, Swayambhuva Manu, that when a son is born that will be able to take care of your daughter, then with your permission, I'm going to leave the household, and the son can then protect her. So when that time came, he left. So Devahuti recognized, it's only a matter of time before my son will also not be here. So in anticipation of his departure, she asks a whole series of very relevant questions, and one very important one amongst them is, what should I do with the balance of my life energy in order to achieve final spiritual perfection? Please instruct me. I'm ready to do whatever you say. Nice question. Very important question. And it's the right person to ask from, an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. And so he gave her an extended answer. But in one part of his answer, he said that in this world, it's actually good that you've asked this question, because it's a very treacherous place, very dangerous. And one can very easily fall into so many traps and allurements and become lost. But therefore, I recommend that you associate with sadhus. And in the verses that Lord Kapila speaks, it's very similar, almost identical, even in the Sanskrit, to the descriptions that Lord Vishnu gives about his devotees who capture his heart and he subordinates himself to. In other words, even in this world, the association of sadhus is so important. Is everything okay? The association of sadhus, I guess I shouldn't say that word, huh? The association of saintly devotees, The association of saintly devotees means association with the Supreme Lord, because those sadhus hold the Supreme Lord within their heart. And although we may not be able to see Adhoksaja, because he's beyond the senses, if we serve those who are very, very dear to Adhoksaja, so dear that he has placed himself at their disposal, he subordinates himself, whatever you want. If those sadhus decide, please give your mercy to this individual. Just like that, because the Supreme Lord has placed himself in that position. He's at the beckon of the desire of the pure devotee. Pure devotee meaning one who has no material desire, but does have one desire, to serve the Supreme Lord. So, the verse that concludes this discussion, Satam Prasangam Mamavirya Samvidho Bhavanti Ritkarana Rasayana Kata Taj Joshinad Ash Apavarga Vartmani Shraddha Ratir Bhaktir Anukramishyati. Very nice verse. Right, Shankar?
Yes.
Very nice verse.
Very nice.
I just even like the sound of the Sanskrit. Satam Prasangan Mamavirya Samvidho Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kata Taj Joshanat Ash Apavarga Vartmani Shraddha Ratir Bhaktir Anu Pramishyati. It's just so nice. What to speak of the meaning? So, to understand, so the verse is saying that it's through the association of these pure devotees that the peacefulness of heart can be established. Bhavanti Rit Karna Rasayana Kata. The messages enter the ear, but then they go straight to the heart, and they're fully enjoyable. So enjoyable that these material attractions just can't enter. There's no attraction for them. There's no space for them. And it's the position of ultimate liberation, apavarga. similar term that's used earlier in the Bhagavatam, where the advice is given that in this human form of life, that should be our only interest, not the interest of executing dharma for material gain. Dharmasya hi apavargasya. That is the purpose of human life. The purpose of our religious activity in human life is ultimate liberation. And what is that ultimate liberation? Shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishati. Step by step, the unfolding takes place. In the beginning, there may be just a little experience of building of our faith, shraddha. But after some passage of time and the heart becomes cleansed, ratir, great feeling and attraction, and pure devotion, outpourings of devotional jubilations from the heart that progressively unfolds. So he describes, time doesn't permit to go through all of this, but it's a very, very nice explanation found in the 25th chapter of the third canto, the glories of devotional service. He describes in one verse the qualities of a devotee. Another very nice verse, Titikshiva Karunika. You know that verse? Go ahead, yeah.
Titikshiva Karunika Surida Saravadevina Ajata Shatrava Santa
Sadhu Bhushanam. Sadhu Bhushan. So we have ornaments on the deity, and there's the ornaments of a devotee. The ornaments of a devotee are the devotee's qualities. And Krishna likes to decorate his devotees with ornaments, just like the devotee likes to decorate Krishna. But Krishna already has all ornaments and has all qualities and has everything. So our business of decorating the deity, serving the deity nicely, is just one way that attracts the Supreme Lord, so that gradually we can also develop a little bit of the qualities of a pure devotee. Titikshiva, very, very tolerant. Karunika, very merciful. Surada Sarva Dehinam, kind to all living entities. And it's the same quality that Lord Vishnu said about Maharaj Ambarish. We see all living entities with great compassion and care. And the other quality that he mentioned is that their mind is always attached to me. So, ajata shatravat, inimical to none, shanta, very, very peaceful. So the position of peace, we know this from Bhagavad Gita, the position of peace is attachment to Krishna. Who knows that verse from Bhagavad Gita? The last verse of the fifth chapter, Prabhupada calls it the peace formula. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridak sarvabhutana gyatvamam shantam ritshati. The position of gyatvamam shantam ritshati, thus knowing me, one can be peaceful. The sadhu is peaceful because the sadhu knows Krishna, knows Krishna's position, and because Krishna is the well-wishing friend of all living entities, and because the sadhu is attached to Krishna, the sadhu becomes the well-wishing friend of all living entities. But once again, try to do that independently. It's not... When I was just little autobiography here, when I was young, I heard that from the scripture, that you should love your neighbor as yourself. And I had a very difficult time executing that, because I found there were a lot of people that were just mean. And I didn't like them. I didn't like their being mean, because there was also a thing that said, you can hate the sin, but not the sinner. But I had a hard time just being around people that were mean and cruel and nasty and, you know, bad association. I didn't like them, what to speak of love them. But that was a commandment. You're supposed to do it. I couldn't figure it out. Until I met devotees, then I could figure it out. Because actually, the prior instruction is to love God with all your heart and mind and strength. And then to love your neighbor as yourself. They follow in sequence. If you actually can love God, and you can have a spiritual conception of others, that they're parts of God, then that covering, that's one thing, but then you can have actual compassion for the suffering, persons who are mean and cruel and harsh and angry and disturbed and all kinds of things. How unfortunate that soul is that's in that condition of life. What can I do to help in that condition of life? But that's not possible. It's a nice thing to speak about, but it's to actually live your life that way without being attached to God. It's not possible. It's nice, but you won't deliver the goods. So, Devahuti's question is how to achieve perfection, how to go the rest of the way. And the instruction that she received from her son was to associate with saintly persons. And here's their quality. Here's how you can identify one when you find one. Here's their qualities, their characteristics. And the very next verse is Mai Ananya Bhavena. They're engaged undividedly in my devotional service. Mai Ananya Bhavena Bhaktim Kurvanti Ye Dridham. They not only have these qualities, but the qualities, it's just part of their whole existence of always serving the Supreme Lord, which is exactly what was Maharaj Ambarish's qualification. While he ruled, he did his dharma, he did his householder duties, he did his particular varna duties, but that was all following behind one primary thing: satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the rest of this is just my duty, which I'm rendering and surrendering everything unto Him. So he was then able to give shelter to all others. And actually give not only protection to Durvasa Muni, but free him from the very, very serious mentality of pride and envy through his association. It was a difficult little test for him, but it came out successful. So if we can find saintly persons in this world, it's the greatest treasure and opportunity. We should take all opportunity to associate with such persons, serve them, hear from them, benefit from their association, and through their association be introduced to the loving position of the Personality of Godhead. Hare Krishna. So, any discussion someone would like to raise? Yes.
So the Lord says that He's not independent, that He's submissive, or subordinate rather, to His devotees.
Yeah.
And we also echo that when we say that you can't please the Lord or win the mercy of the Lord unless you please or get the mercy of the devotee of the Lord first.
Yeah.
So I was wondering what devotee Amaraj Amarish was pleasing, because he seems to be directly pleasing.
Yeah. Prabhupada, nice question. You heard the question? No. I'll repeat the question. I'll try. Subordinate question is, who's that devotee that Maharaj Ambarish was serving and taking direction from? It doesn't indicate by name, but Prabhupada indicates in the purports that it's not possible to achieve such a position as Ambarish Maharaj other than through the mercy of a devotee of the Lord, and Maharaj Ambarish was no exception. So in the narration by Shukadeva Goswami, he doesn't explicitly indicate who, but in the commentators they indicate there was such a relationship. Anything else?
Yes.
You all heard the question, right? How can we make ourselves more a better recipient or a receptacle for the mercy of the Lord? For the mercy of the pure devotee. By practice and desire. I was hearing a lecture lately, kind of in a repeated way. Prabhupada was speaking they were reading one chapter from Bhagavad Gita, and then one of those Prabhupada would from time to time interrupt, and then he would finish his commentary, and then the person would continue reading. And then right in the middle of that discussion, one devotee blurted out a question. We could kind of imagine the situation. If right while I'm speaking right now, somebody just calls out a question. It was one of those kind of things. And the person said, Prabhupada, you're saying so many nice things, and I have just a horrible memory, and I can't remember everything, and will that day come when we can remember everything that you said? And Prabhupada replied, what? And then he did it again, and Prabhupada said, what? And then some servant or someone repeated the question intelligibly, and then Prabhupada paused. And he said, the business of remembering, and he said, like anything, it requires cultivation. And when you practice remembering, then you'll gradually become proficient at remembering. So, in a similar way, to make our hearts more receptive for receiving some mercy from a kind and saintly personality, we have to make our heart free from the so many other contaminations and attachments and other yucky stuff that we keep accumulated very carefully in our hearts. So, by the very basic process of chanting the holy name of Krishna, and worshipping the beautiful deity form of Kishore Kishori, and the Sankirtan, very joyful Sankirtan process, taking whatever opportunities that we have to serve the devotees of the Lord, and by all of these basic processes make our heart more clean, more pure, so that the very precious opportunity for good association can go deeply into our heart. There's one indication that we covered over this weekend that Rupa Goswami says, and that is when we do receive some merciful association in the form of some instruction, we should try very carefully to carry out that instruction with faith and devotion. So that's an instruction of Rupa Goswami. We can get Rupa Goswami's very merciful association by taking that instruction and letting it enter deeply into our heart and trying to carry it out with faith and devotion. We have other saintly persons that we can associate with, try to do the same. Yeah. So I'll repeat the question. Sometimes, like with Durvas Muni, we also, or I'm also put into a situation where a difficulty arises, an important lesson is learned, I can recognize the lesson, I can feel inspired by the lesson, and some time passes, and everything evaporates. And I forget. So how to help hold that lesson deeply and so that it stays. It's another how-to question. It requires through gradual purification or through gradual progress in spiritual life, those things remain. One of the signs of intelligence is good memory. One of the signs of purification is that the instructions or the lessons of life, they stay with us. That's the privilege of the advanced soul. And forgetting is the tendency of the rest of us. So when we become spiritually advanced, those lessons will remain. I can share one impetus so to help things remain. Prabhupada said once that it's 10th class to make a mistake, it's first class to learn from the mistake. But we generally find ourselves bouncing between the 10th class or making mistakes and then somehow forgetting the thing. And Prabhupada didn't like that. When persons who he was training made some mistake, those that served with him intimately consistently described this, that the first time the mistake was made, Prabhupada was very lenient, like a very gentle father. But he expected that one would learn from that. And if the same mistake was made again, as soft as the rose became hard like a thunderbolt, second time around. He didn't do that with everyone. He did that with those who could take it. But he expected that we would learn. And it's our laziness, along with our lack of spiritual advancement, that causes lessons to just fly away and disappear. We're conditioned. And we're conditioned to be conditioned. We're conditioned to be a little not attentive. But if we had a very personal understanding of Krishna's reciprocation, just to bring us to that realization, we would be less negligent or less careless. It's our lack of personal relating with Krishna, personally relating with Krishna. Krishna's got to teach us over and over again like we're little children, instead of being ready to learn our lesson and move on. We're lazy and conditioned. Krishna is very kind. He doesn't kick us away and gives us again and again opportunities to learn the same lessons until we learn them sufficiently, until we're pure in our devotion. So I'll end there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.